This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to the Library Science Channel of New Books Network. My name is Jen Hoyer, and today I'm speaking with Catherine Copper, author of The Experimental Library, A Guide to Taking Risks, Failing Forward, and Creating Change, published by ALA Editions in 2023. The Experimental Library focuses on how information professionals can use experimentation to make evidence-based decisions and advance innovative initiatives. The last 5 years have demonstrated that sticking with the status quo is not an option. Instead, as the experiences of many libraries have shown, those that experiment are better positioned to adapt to rapidly changing environments and evolving user needs and behaviors. This book explores how to draw from new approaches and technologies to harness experimentation as a tool for testing ideas and responding to change. Catherine Copper is head of Eberhard Zeidler Library at the University of Toronto. Catherine, welcome to New Books Network.
Thank you, Jen.
And before we start talking about your book, I would really love if you could introduce yourself to listeners. Maybe you can share a bit about where you grew up, what kind of path your education took, and what brought you to the work you're doing in libraries.
Yeah, I'd be happy to share, talk about how I got here and ended up writing this book. So I grew up actually in the States. So I grew up in Wisconsin, which is a lovely place to visit. And I did my undergraduate at UW-Madison. And, you know, it was kind of like in that time in your life, you're an undergrad, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do, what I was going to study. And I just thought, like, where would I like to work? And I knew I wasn't a sort of cubicle office type person. And I'm not joking, like, I literally was like, a library. I'd love to work in a library. So now thinking back to it, like, I always was kind of interested in the space that libraries occupied. So I started studying English because I clearly thought if I was going to be a librarian, I should read books. And in retrospect, you know, I think I could have studied architecture history, because I'll talk about how I got into architecture libraries, or even art history would have been interesting to me. But here I am. And then I came to grad school at the University of Toronto at the iSchool. So that was my kind of first opportunity, not just to leave Wisconsin, but I really wanted to go to a program that was like a little forward thinking. And I liked the program at U of T because they had at that time a tech stream. And I remember we would look at how databases and like library systems were designed. So that was interesting to me. And then at some point I figured out I could combine like my personal interest in architecture. So I've always loved being around creative people and cities and buildings. And so somebody randomly, I realized much of life in libraries is serendipitous moments. So somebody said to me, oh, you're going to study libraries. You should be an architecture librarian. And I don't even know who this person was, but thank you, whoever said that, because then it was set in my mind, like, that's what I was going to do. So I finished up grad school. I did some internships with some architecture firms and design think tanks. And then I landed my first job back in the States. So I crossed the border again. And I was at Woodbury University School of Architecture in San Diego. And this was really interesting because it is a small liberal arts, a private university. And I was at the satellite campus. So the main campus was in Burbank, LA area, and I was in San Diego. And this is really where I kind of had the chance to mold what it meant to be a librarian, because I was the first professional librarian. So I didn't realize that at the time, but it very much was an experiment. And I was just kind of like figuring out what the role of the library and librarian was there. I also learned a lot about architectural education at that time. So this model of like, you know, making a design, pinning it up on the wall, getting critiqued, going back to your desk, doing another iteration. So you'll see how that kind of like starts to influence my way of thinking in libraries. And also living in Southern California, you're surrounded by a lot of like young professionals. Many of my friends worked with like just started their own startups, and I had people working remotely for like Silicon Valley and these tech companies. And so that was very influential, like seeing how my friends were kind of starting to form their careers. And then I moved to Virginia, and I was at Virginia Tech. And this is really where this idea of experimentation for me was cemented. I was also the architecture librarian there, but I'll talk maybe later on about how this idea of experimentation came up. And then now I'm happily at the University of Toronto and kind of figuring out what I want to do with this platform and what I want to do with the ideas from the book, and still in an architecture library. I think that I will always be in an architecture library.
That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing all that. So then turning to this book, could you describe a little bit about what you're talking about when you discuss experimentation in the library and why you wanted to write a whole book about this, what your hopes were for it?
Yes. Okay. So to me, there is the idea of what an experiment is, but really it's a mindset, right? And so when the idea for the book came up, I had been, like I said, at the small private university, and there, like, I was very limited in budget. I was limited in staff. It was a small library. And I figured out how to like really do some big things and like make some big changes there. And then I went to Virginia Tech, where it was like I had a much bigger budget and a bigger footprint. And again, figured out how to implement some new ideas and really like change the way the library was thought of and like received. And so it was like I realized you could do this and at wherever you were, with whatever kind of budget, whatever kind of team. And so it was just for me like a mechanism to move things forward. But more than anything, it was like having worked with different people and again in different landscapes, it was like this mindset of just being willing to try new things and take new risks. So the book does outline like what an experiment is and, you know, different types of experiments and how you can do them. But it's really about moving new ideas forward. And at the core, it's about a culture change, really, and not just like in my library, but libraries more generally speaking. So I was able to look really at startups and technology companies. Like they've always kind of fascinated me, how my friends were able to just like, what I felt like was take these big risks and somehow like launch these new ideas. And it was kind of like, well, why can't we do that? Like, what is kind of holding us up from doing something big and innovative? So for me, the book was about taking what these tech companies and startups do and mapping it to like what I call more risk-averse sectors like libraries. So my hopes with writing the book were really like just to get people excited about the potential of libraries. And I think especially, I mean, I've said this every year that I've been a librarian, but I really mean, like, especially right now, like with AI and all these new technologies, like there's so much potential for the way we deliver information and the way we can like help users and advance research that it's really exciting. So I wanted anyone to feel like they can do it, they can take a new idea, and they can put it into practice, regardless of, you know, your scope, the size of your team, your budget. Like, it's really possible for anybody to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. I really liked your focus on how it's about a mindset. That really struck me. And so then looking at this book, there's three different parts to it. And the first focuses on this broader history of organizational cultures of experimentation. So really looking outside the library. What have you seen in these kinds of spaces that it looks like to incorporate curiosity into the workplace? And how can we learn from these other sectors that are already really making experimentation part of the work that they do?
Yeah, so what I realized in kind of doing the research for this book, because going into it, like I don't have a background, like I didn't come from a tech company, you know, it was just kind of like what I saw on the outside and kind of, well, how do they do it? And so what I've realized looking into different companies and startups is it's really built into the DNA of the organization, and it's built into the daily work that they do. So it's not just a kind of top down, like the people at the top get to try out these new big ideas, but it was like everyone in the organization at all levels are encouraged to pitch ideas. And it's like minimal to no approval necessary. So basically, like if you're a web designer and you want to make the buy button yellow, it's like you just do it. You don't have to ask for approval. You don't have to get a budget. Like everybody's encouraged to just kind of like try it, you know? And if it turns out that the yellow button got people to buy 10% more products, well, good, you know, good for you. And then you take that up and it becomes like a permanent change. Many times the, you know, the yellow button doesn't work. And so that was the other thing, is that these companies really understand that like you have to take the risk, and you have to realize that most of the risks you take are not going to be successful. And you have to be okay with like letting employees and teammates and colleagues do that. And, you know, in the research, it was like, I think it was like Google or Microsoft, one of these companies do over 10,000 experiments a year. And most of them fail. Like most of them are not something they stick with, but they understand that the value in that, and that like eventually one is going to be worth sticking with. So this is kind of the mindset and the culture in these companies, but then they build in things like flex time. So you have time, you have it in your job description that you're, you know, committed whatever, you know, one day a week to kind of like playing with new ideas, writing a grant, whatever, to kind of move something forward. And then, you know, they'll do things like pink zones. So where you'll bring different people into a project and you just kind of are testing out a new idea. And the reason it's called a pink zone is because there's less red tape. Right. So again, it's like you don't need all these approvals to move ideas forward. So how I see, you know, what I see for libraries is like, first and foremost, I think we are curious by nature. Like, I think we all like to learn. We like to do the research. We like to find the new ideas. And so we have that like foundation. And that was the other thing about these companies, is that they like really encourage curiosity. And I do feel like libraries and like the people that I've worked with are very curious and like wanting to learn. So increase, you know, putting this emphasis on professional development and creating opportunities for librarians to continue learning. And for myself, this has kind of meant adopting this philosophy, not just for myself, but also for the people I work with in my team, that like we can all pitch new ideas, you know, like we can together kind of challenge the status quo, like not keeping the library how it currently is, but constantly thinking about like what else we can be doing to kind of, to just help, not like help our users, but also just test what it means to be a library.
Totally. One thing that I'm thinking about while you're talking is like you did mention, and I agree, that libraries are often risk averse. And then you have also mentioned, and again, I agree, that librarians are super curious people. And that's an interest. I mean, I don't know that you have more thoughts about that. I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but that's an interesting thing for me to sit with and think more about, how as curious people, we are in these like pretty risk averse spaces.
Yes. And I think it stems from, at least from what I've been able to figure out, is because libraries are not big money makers, right? So it's like, we're curious, but we don't always have the freedom or flexibility to just like, we're very limited in our time and our budgets and our energy. So it's like, we almost need to invest the time in the things that we know are a sure thing. Because then we can like say, oh, hey, we served this many users, you know, and then like retain our existing budgets. And so historically, like we've been able to continue to exist by doing that. But I also think it limits us in many ways from kind of being proactive. You know, it's often like a new technology or something. We're like, we're reacting to situations a lot of the times because we don't have that flexibility built into our work.
Totally.
I mean, we can't have the flexibility.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's, like you pointed out, there's a lot of pressure to show success, although maybe we will talk more later about like what we can define as success and failure.
Totally.
Then I guess moving along to the second part of the book, and this is maybe a complicated thing to ask about, but the second part focuses on a methodology for experimentation, even while you emphasize that like the method is there to be broken, perhaps. So can you start by outlining that method, kind of the building blocks that we have to work with, and then maybe share how you got started with imagining some possible experiments in libraries you've worked in?
Yes. So thank you for pointing out that it's a method that's meant to be broken, because I very intentionally call it an anti-method. And I mean this because like I very much like a step-by-step process, right? And I like the idea of like, if you do A and B, you'll get C. And what I've had to kind of learn, and especially working with like designers, has really helped me, because I don't support, you know, science or scientific research. I support design research, and it's a bit chaotic. Like you never kind of get to your clean, simple answer in a straight line. So it's meant to be kind of adapted and molded and fluid. So it's a method of sorts. But anyway, there are basically what I came down to like five things, regardless of the order that you do it, or if you do 1, 2, 3 and you go back to 1 and you skip to 5, but really like these five parts that an experiment has to have. And so it's ideation, right? Like coming up with the idea, and it could be the idea for the experiment, but it can also be like the idea of the problem that you want to solve. But this kind of brainstorming, discussing it with stakeholders, like coming up with the idea. There's the design of the experiment. So this can be as simple as, you know, how long is the experiment going to run? Who are you going to engage? It can also be like taking the big idea and breaking it into something that is testable. So designing the experiment, experimenting, which the chapter in the book called Experiment is really examples of different experiments. Engaging, so outreach, like an experiment does not exist if you don't have people testing it. So in this chapter, I also think of engaging or outreach as an experiment. So trying different ways, maybe that you haven't tried before, to reach users. And then assessing, which I can talk about in more detail later, but really building on kind of user experience and different ways of kind of gathering data and evaluating the data. So those five components then: ideate, design, experiment, engage, and assess, make up what I call the idea anti-method. And I didn't have the method, you know, ready to go when I first kind of came to experimenting. It came later. But the experimenting for me came from being the head of a branch library. And I've always been, like I said, an architecture library. So I sit in this very unique place I found in the last like 5 to 10 years, where I felt like the main campus library was trying to be like a collaborative maker space type of model. And when you're an architecture library, you work in a faculty or school of architecture where they have collaborative studio spaces and they have 3D printers and robotics and like, materials to make models with. So there was, for me, trying to figure out like what the role then of an art or architecture library is. And eventually I landed on, what these other libraries are doing are they're experimenting with like, hey, if we open up a prototyping studio or we launched data visualization, like it was all just an experiment. Or if you put in movable furniture, like it's an and then same with the architecture school. So to me, it was kind of this way to be a part of those two kind of, like I felt like I was being pulled in two different directions. And it was like an answer to being a part of both cultures. And anyway, I then tried to kind of brand it, and I had what I called an experimentation station, and I've never like totally loved that name. I think it's okay. And it was just a small, 3x4 square foot space in the library. It was right up in the front and there were glass windows so everybody could see in. And just every semester, I would have a new piece of technology. So we did things like with iPad apps. We tried 3D doodlers because, again, like the architecture school had 3D printers. The main library had a 3D lab. And so I was like, well, I don't need a 3D printer, but what about like these 3D pens? And like students actually liked them. And then we did things with like VR and having a technology called a looking glass. So students could do like their 3D designs and then it would appear in this glass box, which was kind of cool. So I was just kind of testing out these little pieces of technology in an effort to kind of brand myself with the library and the architecture school. And what I realized when I was doing this, and this was like a moment for me where it was like the experiments weren't just happening at the experimentation station, like the experiments were everything I was doing in the library. And like, so the new art space or the new tables or the, smart board in the group study room. And that for me was when I realized like, wait a minute, this is a mindset. Like this is just an approach to everything that I'm doing. Like I'm trying it. I don't have to stick with it, but it's worth trying.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I guess one of the parts of this process that you mentioned is assessment and evaluation, which I feel like we talk about a lot in libraries. And so I'm curious why you think those parts of the process are so important for a culture of experimentation. And also, I would love to know if you have any thoughts on how that kind of assessment of experiments is similar to or different from assessment we're already doing? Like, can we build on the skills we already have for assessment, and what else can we learn?
Yes. I'm so glad you asked this question because the assessment piece is actually critical for the experimentation. And I totally agree. Like in the last, again, 5 to 10 years, like I've seen a lot more positions for assessment librarians being posted. Now I see them being called UX librarians. So that's great too, whatever you call them, but we're really doing the same thing, right? And like, we realize the value in having data and using that data and then making decisions based on that data. So that really is the kind of key piece of experimentation, is that you're making decisions, you're throwing out something, right? Like a simple idea, a prototype, and you're gathering data on that to then make an informed decision. So it's kind of like moving away from assumptions or intuition and leaning into the data and informed decision-making. And so we are doing that. But I think where it differs is that I think we've been using assessment to kind of look at the big picture or the big projects. You know, we have a lot of legacy projects that we do in libraries, like just because this is the way we've done it, or this is the space we've always used, this is the class we've always taught, like that we continue to do it. And so what's different with experimentation is that we're not looking at like the big projects and collecting the big pieces of data. We're doing it in like small incremental pieces. And this really is where the UX and user experience design comes in. So it's meant to be an iterative process, right? It's supposed to be small changes that maybe add up to something big, but maybe they're just small changes and like those are wins too. So again, starting with a prototype, gathering the data, and then reiterating that. So maybe you add on, maybe you like realize, you know what, like that wasn't a good idea, and being able to let that go. And so that's the difference for me. Like, I think we have made an investment and put value on assessment. But I think it's doing more small scale iterative projects. And that's the difference.
Totally. Yeah. And this is where, like, I was thinking when I mentioned earlier, this like sort of reformulation of our idea of failure. There was something that you wrote in, I think, in the context of assessment here about how like everything is actually a success. Because if it doesn't work, that's still teaching us something. Like, we're learning from everything that we do, whether it's like what we would have traditionally called a success or not.
Yes. So this actually came up my very first experiment I did at the experimentation station were the iPad apps, because I had done them at Woodbury. Like, I had done something similar at the smaller university and they were a huge success. Like, I had done a whole workshop and I had been invited to speak at other libraries on using iPad apps for architecture. And so like also technology, you know, changes in the way we use technology changes. But I thought this was going to be a sure win, right? Like at the next university. And it just didn't have the kind of pickup that I had seen previously. So it was a different student population, you know, it was a different curriculum. And yeah, but it like, to me, we didn't, I guess it was a failure, right? But it wasn't really, because I then realized, well, actually what students want are the technology that they don't have immediate access to. You know, like by that time they had mobile phones, or many of them had iPads. So then I started like thinking more about the virtual reality and these things. So yes, there is no failure. There isn't, because you can always like learn something. And then if you just iterate or like try the next version of that, you know, it's the same thing as scholarship or research. Like, it's progressing. You're trying to progress in some way.
Yeah, it's super liberating to think that nothing is an absolute failure.
Very liberating.
And then moving on to the final section of your book, this is where you talk a lot about how we can grow cultures of experimentation in our own libraries. So we've talked about this a lot as mindset. What would you suggest are some of the key mindsets we should embrace and skills we should start building? I guess, you know, thinking about listeners who work in all kinds of different kinds of libraries, where would you suggest these folks start in their own work as experimenters and in the growing an organization's readiness to experiment?
Yeah. So actually, Jen, I think this builds really nicely on the failure piece, because I think, yeah, it is the mindset, right? Like, it's being willing to try new things. And it's not just like willing it, but like truly supporting it. And so it's not just like yourself, but your teams that you work with. So in order to kind of be willing to try the new things, we have to be okay with the failure and like realizing that the new things aren't always going to work. And then being okay with letting those things go. So not just the new things, but the current things we're doing as well. So I think annual planning happens for all of us at different times. But we are very much right now at University of Toronto in our kind of annual planning cycle. And one of the things we're asked to do every year is, you know, document what we're going to let go of. And this is the hardest part. It's the hardest thing to do because I think we have a tendency to want to do it all in libraries. But yeah, again, making like using the data on what really is a good use of our time and making decisions based on that. So that's really the key mindset. And as far as skills to develop, like I said, I think we're many of us are curious by nature. So we have that going for us. And there's certainly opportunities to expose ourselves to new ideas. So I often think about where I get the most ideas, and it's not in my library meetings. And it's not sitting in front of my computer writing emails, but it's when I go to like the architecture lecture, or I go to like a new tech talk, or I'm just like out for a walk. Like that's where ideas come to me. So I think building those types of things into our work and like allowing ourselves to go to a conference that maybe isn't exactly a library conference, but just kind of on the peripheral. I also think there's a lot that can be learned from cross-training. And again, not just cross-training in libraries, but like opportunities to shadow other professions or other sectors. And mentoring, I think, is very interesting as well. And I would love to see, I mean, I have seen pairings like this before, but in the book, when I talk about like how to bring experimentation to your organization, one of the ideas is about mentorship, but it's not, I think we often think of mentorship as like senior and junior librarians paired together. And, you know, a lot of the times it's the librarians coming out of grad school or the ones entering the profession that I think can bring new ideas or coming from different professions. And so pairing up people in that sense and having, you know, kind of like experiment coordinators that can kind of help guide experiments or make connections with people within the organization. I'm also a big proponent of flex time. And again, like, I know it's hard, like we're all very limited and the staff and everything we have to get done in the day. But it was at that first university I worked at, Woodbury University, where we had one day a week that was, and it really was that we were allowed to do professional development. And this was where I felt like I had the most freedom to kind of test new ideas. And I had the kind of time in my schedule to think of those ideas. So building in flex time when we can. Yeah. And I guess I would just say like to bring this to our organizations, like the skills and mindset, I think a lot of it comes down to leading by example and like being the type of leader that we want to encourage our teams. And it doesn't even have to be top down, you know, like it can be a ground up thing too. Like if you're wanting, because I was that person at Woodbury that was like wanting to try out the new idea. And sometimes you just kind of have to like do the prototype, right? And like try a little piece of it and say like, hey, this worked. Like, can we try it on a bigger scale? So for me, that's been a lot of what this brings, is not just showing our users, like we're willing to try new things and be a space where you can try new things, but also showing our teams and our other library colleagues that like we're encouraging them to try new things as well.
Yeah. I mean, it just sounds like a good work environment in general to cultivate that kind of environment. Well, before we wrap up, I would really love if you could share a little bit about what you're working on next now that this book is out in the world. Maybe you have new experiments you're trying or other research projects that you're working on now that you've wrapped up this book.
Yeah. So it's funny to ask this question because I feel like I'm just really thinking through this right now, but somebody had once told me, you know, they think of their career in decades and like what you did with that 10 years and what you're going to do with the next 10 years. And so the book, this book for me was really kind of like, I don't know, like the youth and kind of like teenage years a bit of my career. And so now I'm kind of at a point where it's like, well, what do, you know, I've done all this. Like if I could have looked at myself coming in out of grad school and seeing where I was now, like I've done everything that I could have imagined that I wanted to do. So what do I want to do with the next 10 years is really like, you're asking me this, Jen, but I'm also asking myself this. And one of the things I've always really wanted to do, like I've done a lot of these little experiments, right? And I think I've done enough of the little experiments that I'm ready to kind of test a bigger idea that's been on my mind, which has to do with augmented reality and artificial intelligence and kind of what an AR/AI library would look like. And I think I'm very well situated in an architecture library to do this because they're very, well, you already know I love like the space, right? But like thinking of how to use the library space, the physical space, but also architects and artists, like we all love the book as well. So how to use the physical space and the physical book to take us into the digital. So this idea of like AR. So this has been something I've been thinking about. And I talk about like little experiments that I've done kind of getting to that idea. But I think, you know, I'm in a very good position at University of Toronto where there's a, you know, a lot of focus on AR and AI computer science that I could bring the right people together to kind of test something bigger like this. So that's maybe a 10-year project. In the short term, honestly, I'm just really enjoying right now. Like, this is the first book I've written, and it's an experience. Like, what I kind of learned was you do a lot of it in isolation. Like, you're just writing this book, right? And then all of a sudden, it's out in the world. And it's been really rewarding to see the kind of uptake on the book, but the ideas, right? Like, I think people are very excited about this idea of experimentation. So I'll be speaking at ALA with the book and with some other organizations. So I'm kind of curious just to see, yeah, like where are all the other experiments happening and what people do with these ideas. And maybe there's a second book or a second edition of new experiments in the future. That I would like to line up with a research leave.
Yeah,
because this one was written during COVID and young kids and job transitions. And so, yeah, these might be 10-year projects.
Totally. Yeah. Well, that sounds like a lot of really, really fantastic things to work on. And I hope that, all these great conversations that you have coming up at conferences and stuff, I'm excited for those. I hope that those are really, really fruitful. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for chatting. Once again, I've been speaking today with Catherine Copper, author of The Experimental Library, A Guide to Taking Risks, Failing Forward, and Creating Change. My name is Jen Hoyer, and you're listening to New Books Network.